On 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Tonight on PBS stations across the country, including Channel 10 in Milwaukee, PBS and the series American Experience will be sharing with the public a fascinating and illuminating new documentary called Billy Graham. And of course, that name refers to an American evangelist of exceptional influence over the course of decades, and also a man who underwent quite an interesting, even startling, and also maybe largely forgotten metamorphosis of sorts. I mean, the Billy Graham of the last two decades of his life was not the same Billy Graham at the outset of his career. And all of those facets of this fascinating man are explored in this beautifully constructed film that is directed by my morning show guest, Sarah Colt, who is responsible for a number of previous films. And I suspect she and I have spoken about at least several of them. I forget sometimes if I'm speaking to the director or the producer or exactly who, but she had a hand in the creation of such really fine films as Walt Disney, The Gilded Age, Henry Ford, The Polio Crusade, a portion of We Shall Remain, all films that we have discussed on the morning show. And again, this latest film, Billy Graham, airs tonight on PBS. And Sarah Colt, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
I wonder if I could, if you'll permit me one question that doesn't have a lot to do specifically with this film. I was reading in your biography this morning about the fact that you actually, before you began work as a documentarian, did work as a still photographer. I wonder if you could just say a word, first of all, about what drew you into the field of photography itself, and then it would be interesting to hear a little bit about how that migration occurred from still photography into the world of documentary films.
Well, that's such a question I wasn't expecting, but kind of fun to talk about, which is that I was lucky enough to go to a high school that had a lot of art and emphasis on art, and I got very involved in photography as a high school student. And then when I went to college, I kind of couldn't quit it. You know, I didn't go to college thinking that I was going to do photography, but I just was sort of like drawn to it. And for me, what became very exciting about photography was what the camera allowed you to do, which was it gave you this kind of ticket or sort of excuse to spend time with different people from different backgrounds and different, you know, ages, and, you know, and every sort of, I could immerse myself in worlds that I wouldn't have been able to immerse myself in without the camera. And that was incredibly liberating to me as a person. I just have been endlessly interested in people and the human condition. And so photography just became this way that I could follow that curiosity and that interest. And I actually, when I graduated from college, I spent a year living in Zimbabwe, and I took pictures in Zimbabwe. And I also worked for an AIDS awareness organization, but I, you know, took pictures, and I realized that I was frustrated with the just stills. I kind of wanted to be able to tell more. So that was kind of how I moved from still photography to documentary making.
I'm also curious, This is also a question you might not anticipate, but in general, and this will lead us into the film about Billy Graham, generally speaking, especially when it comes to, for instance, working with an established series like American Experience, where do the ideas come from? I mean, is it very often that it occurs to you, oh my gosh, we need to create a film about Henry Ford? Or is it more often that someone comes to you and say, we need a film made about Henry Ford or polio or whatever it might be? Or is it impossible to generalize?
Well, I would say that I've been incredibly lucky and privileged to make films for American Experience. And so I really grew up working for American Experience. I worked for a filmmaker who was making films for them, and I learned a lot about the sort of the craft working for this filmmaker named David Gruben. And then I was lucky enough to be asked to make a film for American Experience as a director and a producer in my own right. And, working for them, it's almost, it's a collaborative process, but a lot of times it's about fundraising and about, commissioned films. So, for example, Henry Ford came to me from American Experience saying, we want you to make a film about Henry Ford. And what's so exciting about my job is that many times, to be perfectly frank, like Henry Ford was not something I was like desperately trying to make a film about. But once you scratch the surface on almost any of these topics, even if they were maybe on first blush not something that I'm personally interested in, it's just so exciting, and so interesting. And what we can do with documentary making is different than what a historian would do or a journalist would do. I mean, we have a very special thing that we can do, and I really love that, the archive and the what you can bring to a film.
So what's the story with Billy Graham then? Is this an idea that was brought to you, or is this more an idea generated by you?
Well, this one is definitely sort of in collaboration with American Experience. So it's always a back and forth about what's interesting and what would be, resonate. And I think for me, what was so exciting about the possibility of Billy Graham is, number one, it just felt his life and his story is so relevant to where we are today. And that was always the emphasis, because of course, with American Experience, we're really looking at how people and stories influence the kind of American life, in a bigger way. And so it wasn't just Billy Graham's religious impact. It was about how did he intersect with American public life that was so interesting. But I also was really excited to do another biography. I've now come to learn that I love doing biography. And so that was really exciting to me, was to think about, because we talked about a lot of different ways to come at similar issues, and we landed on Billy Graham, and that was just very exciting to me.
Right. A couple of things struck me as I watched the film. One of them was it felt like a wonderful topic for a documentary film, because there is so much that exists, archivally speaking, that would be this treasure trove from which you could draw. And even beyond the obvious, just give our listeners even just kind of a rough idea of the array of resources that you are able to put in this film in terms of enriching the visual element of it. I mean, to I would say an exceptional extent.
Well, that's the thing. So I thought we were really lucky when I've been now working with a producer named Helen Dabrowski on all of these projects, and she's very much a partner with me at this stage in our relationship. And we thought we had a lot of material on Henry Ford. Henry Ford had the largest production company in the world, which a lot of people don't know, at a certain point, because he was excited about film, and which was a new technology, and he had more money than almost anyone in the world, so he could do whatever he wanted. And then we made a film about Walt Disney, and we had access to the Disney, not only the Disney archives, but also the Disney collection. And we were sort of overwhelmed with the richness of that collection and what we had. Let's just say that Helen and I realized doing Billy Graham was like 3 times more material than both of those films. So that, I think, puts into perspective, we just had amazing, I mean, he had documentaries made about him. He made television. He recorded radio. He recorded all his sermons. There was just audio, you know, footage, stills. He had a photographer named Russ Busby who followed him around basically from sort of the late 1950s or mid 1950s for the, you know, rest of his career. So we're talking about millions of negatives. I mean, there was so much material. It was actually, to be perfectly honest, really overwhelming.
Right. And you didn't even mention the fact that there are extensive home movies, even from early in his life. I mean, and that's a little bit exceptional. I mean, not everybody in that era had a movie camera or thought to use it or thought to preserve those home movies or for them to still be around and in apparently pretty good shape many decades later. I mean, it's just really, really incredible. I also appreciated the fact that I think you draw from a really impressive lineup of experts who offer their analysis of Billy Graham and his life and career, but also that one of those voices is his own sister. Just say a word about how exciting it was. I assume it was exciting to have her participation in this film, and tell us maybe a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah, no, that was really, I was so grateful to Jean Ford, who's Billy Graham's younger sister. She was 13 years younger than him. So he died at 99, and Jean Ford is in great shape in her late 80s and married to Leighton Ford, who was also a hugely important person in the movement that Billy Graham was involved in. So he's an evangelist in his own right. So both of them were really important and relevant interviews. And, you know, I normally, working for American Experience, we have academic advisors on the project. And one of Billy Graham's biographers, Grant Wacker, who's a longtime professor at Duke University, was my advisor on this project. And so early on, he introduced me to Jean and Leighton, and they were really incredibly generous with their time and their energy. And they invited me into their house, and I met them, and it was such a just an incredible pleasure to meet them. And then I followed up quite quickly to do an interview with them in person. And I'll just tell you how grateful I was that I did, because I interviewed them in February of 2020 in person. Ooh. And then every other interview for this film had to be done remotely.
Wow. So you could actually be in the room with them and have this conversation.
Yes.
That brings to mind something I was very anxious to talk with you about. And that is the fact that, neither PBS nor American Experience is in the business of proselytizing, and that when an organization like PBS or a show like American Experience is taking up matters related to religious life here in America or matters of religious faith, I should think it becomes a somewhat tricky situation in terms of how to proceed and how to be objective and fair and thorough and yet respectful. And particularly if you are maybe talking about somebody and or a religious faith or tradition that is not your own or not something with which you feel a particular affinity or sympathy or maybe even much of an understanding. I wonder if you could just talk about this matter. And the question comes to mind as you're talking about speaking with both Jean Ford and her husband, who obviously are part of this world. And I'm impressed and happy that they trusted you and American Experience, in a sense, to tell the story of Billy Graham in a way that they could feel good about and wanted to be a part of. There's a lot wrapped up in that question. Good luck.
I mean, the thing is, everything that you've just said were all the things that we grappled with from beginning to end on this project. And, you know, we talked about it a lot with American Experience, and we talked about it a lot internally in my team and with the advisors. And, you know, it is, those are all very complicated questions. I think what we hoped to achieve was to really, even if you were, if you're not religious in any way, or if you're of a different religion, you're not Christian, hopefully we have presented the story of someone who had deep belief and had a way of winning people over. You know, in order to understand Billy Graham, you have to somehow connect with what he's doing, even if you don't, you know, even if you don't follow those beliefs. And so he was a very, very good, I mean, he was so good with people, but from a distance, I struggled throughout the project to really understand what it was that he was doing that really did win people over. And so we worked really hard to get intimate with him. You know, and so the home movies that you brought up, you know, that was a way of saying, okay, what's he like when he's not on camera? And then, you know, we talked with people who had been, you know, had the experience of being at a Billy Graham crusade. And we ended up telling the story of one person who we hope, or I hope, can feel representative of what a lot of people experienced being either hearing Billy Graham on the radio or being in person at a Billy Graham crusade. But, you know, all the questions that you just asked me are all the questions that we hope we fulfilled appropriately with this film. And, you know, the jury's out whether people think that we did or not. I'm sure we'll get criticism from both sides, you know, on what we did. But we tried to be, you know, as objective as you can be. We all know that we're not, nobody is, you know, we all have our own opinion or our point of view, but we tried to be objective with how we presented it.
Right. Well, that was certainly my impression. And I should say that, you know, in addition to what you just said about if somebody is not religious at all, or if somebody is not of the Christian faith, and, you know, I would actually represent a third body of viewers, and that would be someone who is a Christian, but not really this kind of Christian. I mean, who does not come from this evangelical fundamentalist wing of Christianity, or although I do have that some of my personal history, but it's certainly not who I am now. It's not the type of Christianity to which I now embrace. I'm only mentioning my own personal faith to say that I watched this film as somebody who knew who Billy Graham was, who understands him, who does not walk that exact same walk as he does. And from my perspective, I really appreciated the fairness with which you treated him. I mean, for whatever issues I might have or others of my ilk might have about what he represents, I still want him treated fairly in a program like American Experience. And I really feel like you did that. Can you just give us a sense of what are the points along the way in which some of these concerns about being fair or how to treat him, at what points in the process is that most crucial? Is it early on as you're researching? Is it as you're crafting the script? Is it as you're editing, as you're making choices for the visuals? I mean, or is it at every single step along the way that you have to be thinking about some of these really complicated questions?
Well, you bring up you've really laid out nicely the process, because we spend a lot of time before any filming takes place and even any archival research really begins in earnest. We read a lot of books, and I worked with a writer named Kevin McAllister on this project, and he did a tremendous amount of work before I was even involved in the project. And so we think about, well, what is it that we want to say? And then it's really when you get into the edit room that you start to wrestle with how to say what you want to say through the medium of documentary filmmaking. And so it's a real process in the edit room, and you go through many, many passes. And just, you know, to speak to the kind of idea of, well, we're not trying to proselytize, but we actually need to show what Billy Graham did to understand who he was. when people hopefully watch the film, they'll see that we do a kind of moment of revelation of one individual person. His name is John Guest. He lives in Pennsylvania now, but he's originally British. And he saw Billy Graham in the UK in 1954. And when I did that interview with him, I knew that it was a remarkable interview and that he was a remarkable storyteller. And so I tried his interview at the beginning of the film. You know, I tried it all over the place because it's like, can we get this out of the way? We just got to understand this experience and then we can talk about anything else we want to talk about. But it really, you know, often this is the case, it ended up working best in its place, which was just in the chronology of the story. And so it ends up happening about 54 minutes into the film, which is about halfway through the film. Ultimately, I think it works there. But, you know, just to use that as an example of this process, the process is just many, many edit passes where you just keep trying it. And for me, it's really like, how do you feel? How is it making you feel? That's what a film, hopefully it's, you know, educational, I hope, and all of that, but you really need to feel something.
Right. Well, and of course, that thoroughness is a hallmark of American experience documentaries. And it's why these important and often complex stories are told so very well. For those of you just joining us, my guest on today's morning show is Sarah Colt, who is the director of the latest American Experience documentary, airing tonight on PBS Channel 10 in Milwaukee and on PBS stations across the country, devoted to the life and career of American evangelist Billy Graham, who passed away back in 2018 at the age of 99. Your film begins with an excerpt from a Billy Graham crusade that happened in Chicago. A lot of people watching it will recognize what I assume is Soldier Field, and July 17th, 1962. I'm just curious why you chose the film with this kind of cold opening of Billy Graham in action in one of his famous crusades.
Well, as you also might imagine, just thinking about the editing process, and I should, you know, say that I worked with a tremendously talented editor named Jawad Metni on this film, and we tried a lot of different opens for this film. You know, where do you begin this story? And we, fairly late in the editing process, we realized, again, sort of speaking to the point that I was just making, was that the best way to kind of get started with Billy Graham is to let him be in his element. Mm-hmm. And his element, to me, was some sort of, the 50s were the sort of the height of his kind of, he just came to this incredible popularity. And then by the early 60s, he's just like, just tremendously sort of charismatically, perfectly sort of in this kind of sweet spot of, he knows what he's doing. He's, you know, dressing beautifully. He's just a, you know, a very attractive, you know, man in his, you know, 40s. And he's just like really kind of perfectly at his height, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so we started looking at all the footage of different crusades from kind of the 60s. And we came, the Soldiers Field footage was so tremendous and he was so powerful and he's in this crazy huge stadium and everybody's listening, you know? And so we wanted to just start there because it kind of gets a lot of things out of the way by starting there.
Right. And I know one of your experts, as this film is rolling, talks about Billy Graham's animal magnetism. And yeah, that's such an interesting choice of words. And then we see it and hear it for ourselves. And another expert, I think, as this footage plays, says that, you know, for many people, he was almost regarded as the Protestant Pope. I mean, this is when he is, in a sense, at the height of his powers in terms of his impact, a wide swath of the American public. Then you, of course, backtrack to his fairly ordinary childhood and to some of his first professional exploits with the Fuller Brush Company. And this is something I absolutely did not know about him. And I think your film is making a case that there is more than a little connection between that and what he goes on to be so famous for?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, you when you're doing a biography, you do kind of need to know where somebody came from and what their child, something about their kind of childhood and their upbringing. But as you say, Billy Graham had a fairly ordinary childhood. You know, it wasn't, there wasn't sort of a rosebud moment from his childhood. But what became clear was that the ambition starts to grow in Billy Graham. And I think ambition is such an interesting thing. It's like you don't become Billy Graham without being ambitious. It's not possible. So it's like, where did that start? And it certainly wasn't something that happened in one particular moment. It seems like it's something it really builds with him. And I think the point that I came to really realize was that the Fuller Brush summer, so he spent a summer selling Fuller Brushes right after high school, before he was going to college. And so he's making money for college, and he's got a couple of friends, and he's doing this. And he's really, really good at it. And he's winning over these housewives, and he becomes the top Fuller Brush salesman of that summer in North and South Carolina. And he talks about it on in later years. And so we ended up using him talking about the experience and kind of starting there, because it seems like that's the sort of the beginning of the ambition to, you know, I think he didn't quite, at that point, he certainly didn't know what he was going to be selling. But ultimately, when he makes this connection between what he's good at and his faith, then becoming an evangelist is sort of the obvious track for him.
He does grow up in a conservative Christian household, and we're told that at certain points in time, he bridled a little bit against the tight control of his parents. He is sent to Bob Jones College, which is a very, very strict Christian school. And it's at this point in the documentary that you help the viewer understand the stance of the typical evangelical Christian at that point in time. I mean, we're talking about, I suppose, the late 30s into the 40s and so on. But in terms of their relationship with the rest of the world, and this is really important for understanding the whole story of Billy Graham and what he will ultimately represent. Tell our listeners about this sort of earlier form, or maybe earlier flavor, of evangelism, because that will help us understand the contrast with what Billy Graham ultimately does.
Right, and it's really important to understand, you know, I would say that the fundamentalist movement in America is important to understand from the early part of the 20th century. And Billy Graham was, you know, his parents were becoming more conservative and more fundamentalist in their religion as Billy Graham is growing up. And his mother and father want him to go to Bob Jones College because it's a fundamentalist college. And fundamentalists were really carving out their own institutions and their own world within American life, because they didn't feel comfortable with where American life was headed in terms of culturally and where society was. And so they were much stricter in their understanding of the Bible and how they were supposed to live. And so, you know, there's the famous Scopes monkey trial that happened in the 1920s, where sort of fundamentalism was put on display and put into the public, you know, in public. And it was a big, you know, letdown for fundamentalists because they were made fun of. And so they really retreated. And Billy Graham was part of that by going to Bob Jones, sort of in a separate world. And I don't think it made a lot of sense to him as a person, because he had never really been in a separate world as a, you know, in his family. His family were not, you know, they were very much part of their community, and everybody, you know, he was driving cars and going on dates and having, you know, a very normal kind of childhood. So Bob Jones seemed to me the moment in his story that we could really lay the groundwork for what was fundamentalism, because then evangelicalism, the modern evangelical movement, kind of comes out of fundamentalism in the 1940s. And Billy Graham was a figurehead for it. He didn't found it. It wasn't his idea, but he becomes this amazing figurehead for it.
We're speaking with Sarah Colt, who is director of the newest American Experience film, which airs tonight on PBS stations across the country, including Channel 10 in Milwaukee. And the film is devoted to the life and career of evangelist Billy Graham. I think one of the most precious bits of media within your film is when we hear a few words from Bob Jones himself, who, of course, was the head of this very, very strict college. And ultimately, Billy Graham encounters an evangelist by the name of Mordecai Ham and is taken up by what he sees and hears and begins to see himself potentially as a similar kind of evangelical preacher. And it's clear that he has tremendous gifts in this respect. He becomes part of something called Youth for Christ. And this would seem to be an exceptionally important chapter in Billy Graham's early life and a very important chapter in terms of a sort of a new spin on evangelism in America. Tell our listeners why this was so important.
So Youth for Christ was a kind of a youth movement that started during World War II. And it was coming from this idea that they wanted to kind of reinvent, or not reinvent, that's not the right word, but they wanted to kind of put a different spin on what it meant to be a Christian and a conservative Christian. And it was, they came up with the word sort of new evangelical or neo-evangelical. And Billy Graham gets drawn into this movement as an evangelist, as a young man who's just really good at what he's doing. And he just takes the organization by storm. And what people said is there were lots of good preachers among the Youth for Christ ministers, and maybe better preachers than Billy Graham by a stretch. But what Billy Graham was so good at is that he could really convert people. You know, when he asked people to come down and really have the born again experience and convert themselves to Christ, his numbers were always much higher than everybody else. And so Youth for Christ was both critical to his understanding of himself and his abilities, but it was also a really important movement when it came to the modern evangelical movement in general.
I really appreciate somebody who you quote in the film as saying that Youth for Christ was, and apparently this was maybe a phrase they had at the time, geared to the time, but anchored to the rock. And it just underscores the fact that there is something really tricky about trying to be an organization that cares about the traditions on which it is built and yet trying to be relevant and effective in a new and increasingly modern world. I mean, that is no small matter. That is a very, very stiff challenge.
Yes, and I think that's what Billy Graham becomes, you know, almost, you know, he's so good at it. He always believed in the literal, you know, reading of the Bible. His theology never changed from the beginning of his career to the end of his career. But he was willing to say, let's not get caught up in all of these sort of arguments, which is what fundamentalists kind of really, they absolutely weren't unwilling to budge on things. Billy Graham says, let's not get caught up on those. Let's be more inclusive. And that becomes really his message, which is a message of inclusion. And, you know, you can work out the details later. Let's just get people in the tent.
He ultimately begins in his preaching to tie into current events, tie into headlines. And we see that now, and you know, our immediate reaction might be, okay, so what? I mean, isn't that what what they all do? But apparently this was not all that common back in that era for somebody to be preaching this kind of a sermon and to be drawing upon current events. and in this particular case, concerns about things like communism and so on. Is it fair to say that he was a bit of a groundbreaker in the way that he drew this into his preaching?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the answer in terms of like Billy Sunday, how much he would have talked about, you know, he was a famous American evangelist. But what Billy Graham was just really good at it. And he was also, you know, communism, it was sort of, Billy Graham's story is very much, as often these things are, right place at the right time. And so he's sort of the right person. And then there's this huge threat after World War II of this communist scourge and how worried Americans were and how, you know, serious it was. And Billy Graham just picks up on those fears and combines the kind of the public, you know, the current message of anti-communism with a message of hope and, you know, Christianity. And so he's just really good at it, I think. Hmm.
This sets in motion some important events. In 1950, Billy Graham is anxious to meet with then President Harry S. Truman. And it sounds like this is also something that is, you know, maybe kind of uncommon from this part of the Christian faith, part of the Christian church, this rising interest in being kind of a political figure to some extent. Tell listeners about Billy Graham's sort of initial overtures to be able to meet President Harry Truman and how it ultimately went.
Well, the thing you have to, that's so remarkable about this is how young he was. So he was barely 30 and he's knocking on the door of the White House. I mean, he's literally trying every possible way he can to get an invitation to the White House. So using every contact, every, writing letters, reaching out to Congress people who he's met to try to get an invitation to the White House. He finally gets to the White House, as you say, in the summer of 1950. And Truman is kind of, I think, reluctant, but does allow him to come. And Billy Graham goes with several of his associates. And the meeting is, you know, nobody really knows exactly what happened in the meeting. But the sort of big mistake Billy Graham makes is that when he comes out of the meeting, he tells the press everything that happened in the meeting. And Harry Truman was not so impressed by this kind of flashy young preacher. And he was really angry when it's on the front page of every paper across the country that he's been, you know, every detail of the meeting is put on the front page and pictures of Billy Graham. And he had kind of worried that Billy Graham was a showman. And then this just confirmed everything, that he was not a person of depth and that this was a mistake to have the meeting. And so it was a real misstep. This first meeting in the White House was it went really as badly as it could have.
Hmm. And one of the analysts, in talking about why this was so important to Billy Graham, that is to meet with the president, says that Billy Graham did not want to be seen as a backwoods preacher. And it really kind of underscores the fact that Billy Graham is really helping to reshape sort of the public face or image of this kind of conservative evangelical Christian, which maybe a lot of people at that point in time would have seen in very, very different terms as something kind of meant for the out of touch rural America. This was a very different face, a very different image, and it's going to have a very powerful impact.
Exactly. And, Billy Graham, that's the thing that's so interesting about him, because in a way you think if he had been born in a different community to a different family, he would have been a politician or he might have been a movie star. I mean, we might be talking about Billy Graham because he was, you know, the John Wayne instead of John Wayne. I mean, he had that kind of ability, and he gets kind of more sophisticated as time goes on, and he starts wearing suits that are sort of very, you know, sort of fancy. You know, he just looks fantastic and very sophisticated, and he's rubbing elbows with the sort of most elite people in the United States, you know, businessmen and oil tycoons and Congress people, senators, judges, and ultimately the president.
Right. And I want to make sure we reiterate something that is said in the film, which is, for all that you are describing now, this is not the story of, for instance, Jim Baker and PTL and that enormous and awful scandal in which somebody was in this business, but really appears to have been in it for their own personal gain. That Billy Graham, for whatever you might think about what he did or stood for, was very clean in the way that he carried out his ministry, the way the finances were handled, his own conduct was, as far as we can tell, beyond reproach. So he is all of these things, but appears to be really trying to stay true to who he is and what he stands for. His impact, of course, increases over through the course of the 1950s. He becomes a very close ally of Dwight D. Eisenhower and ultimately Richard Nixon and so on. And one of the most interesting stories that your book explores is Nixon versus Kennedy in 1960. And this idea of a Roman Catholic running for president is something that Billy Graham is not very comfortable with at all. And even at a time when he's on the surface trying not to be overtly political, behind the scenes, he does not want Kennedy winning. Can you just say a word about what an interesting moment this is for Billy Graham in terms of his own evolution?
I think it is because we really focused on it because it does seem to, you learn a lot from that story, and hopefully people will enjoy hearing that story in the film. But what I think is crucial is that, as we all know, Kennedy did win the presidency in 1960. And what was important to me was to, even though Billy Graham was working behind the scenes and really did not want Kennedy to win, when Kennedy wins, Billy Graham is right there by Kennedy's side as quickly as he, you know, as possible, because he really understood the power of, you know, being in with the person in power. And so his ambition for that was very much about spreading the message that he had. Now, the part of the film that we hopefully, you know, is interesting and we explore is, where does his personal ambition also play a role in all of that? And I think that's always an important question for people, you know, where, especially if you're a religious figure, where does your personal ambition play into all of this? And I think that's what becomes interesting about Billy Graham.
And of course, what he faces in terms of his own difficulty, a difficult situation, is partly that of the civil rights movement. And although there are times when Billy Graham and Martin Luther King appear on the same stage, when Martin Luther King is quite young, of course, there comes a point when Billy Graham is not willing to step forward and be supportive in the way that many, many people wanted him to. Talk about the difficult choice that Billy Graham was facing in that moment.
Well, it's really interesting if you think about this Southern preacher who, you know, his base, you know, we nowadays talk about the base, and his base was really Southern. It was white. And he wasn't willing, when it became clear that when he was so famous and he was a national and an international figure, when he needed to sort of he couldn't just play both sides. You know, once everybody knows what you're talking about, you can't be in one room and say one thing in another room. And he really did believe, I think, in preaching the message to all people, and he desegregated his crusades before, you know, kind of early on in the 50s. But when it kind of the 60s and the civil rights movement really heated up, Billy Graham was not willing to get on board with civil disobedience and saying that the law, even though the law is a law, the law is wrong. For Billy Graham, the law was the law and you had to follow it. And he kind of gets left behind, I think, on that subject.
Right. And when Martin Luther King writes his famous letter from a Birmingham jail, it's very clear, although he never names Billy Graham, that it is that kind of a moderate that Martin Luther King has really scathing criticism for. But of course, what becomes even more difficult for Billy Graham comes later in the 1960s into the 1970s, when he allies himself very, very closely with President Richard Nixon. And this is something which, of course, really blows up in his face so badly when revelations come to light about really the kind of man Richard Nixon is. What did you find maybe most surprising or revelatory as you explored Billy Graham's relationship with Richard Nixon and what sort of happened in the wake of that?
Well, it was so much fun working on that part of the project because there's so much great material. We've got the White House audio tapes, so we can use those. They're amazing conversations with Billy Graham. It was sort of watching Nixon kind of unraveling, but seeing it through Billy Graham's eyes was a really, as a filmmaker, it was really fun to try to, really construct that and understand it. And I think, it's a really question about power. You get close to power. He was as close to the presidency as he ever was and would be again. He was advising the president. The president was relying on him, not just in a pastoral way, but on political issues. He gave advice about Nixon's speeches and how he should, do better in front of the camera, do better in front of audiences, all the things he was really good at. He's trying to help Nixon be better at. And I think he was really blinded by his, being that close. And he gets, really burned.
And of course, in the wake of that, Billy Graham, to some extent, retreats for a time from his place in American evangelism. And when he reemerges, he really goes overseas, and that's where he ultimately is kind of changed and broadened and opened in terms of understanding the whole world and our place in it. And by the time his career comes to a close, he is a very different man from where he begins. And of course, I think part of the point of your film as well is that the story of Billy Graham is relevant because without him, we would not be where we are right now as a nation.
I think so. Yes. That's really the kind of the thesis of the film is really this sort of door that Billy Graham opens to the role of conservative Christians in political life, very specifically the presidency, and that he had a really instrumental role in Eisenhower's presidency, where a lot of things happened in American history that people don't realize happened in the 50s. And we didn't always say under God when we said the Pledge of Allegiance. That came in the 1950s. In God We Trust was not always on our bill, on our currency. And so all of this kind of mention of God connected with our government has sort of came at that time. So he really was influential, and we live with all of that today.
Absolutely. And again, you tell this long and complex and challenging story so very, very well in your film. The film, again, is simply titled Billy Graham, but there is nothing simple about the man or his story. And the story is told very, very well in this film that you can watch tonight on PBS Channel 10 in Milwaukee and on PBS stations across the country. The director of the film, Sarah Colt. Sarah Colt, thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show. It was great to reconnect with you, and congratulations on a fine film.
Thank you so much. I'm so appreciative.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Larry Loftus and a really terrific book called The Princess Spy. It's the absolutely true story, but in some ways amazing true story of a woman by the name of Eileen Griffith, who was a spy for the United States during the Second World War. Wednesday's morning show is a conversation about baseball with Galen White. His latest book is called The Greatest Baseball Town in America, which looks primarily at the world of minor league baseball, particularly back in the 1950s. Thursday, you'll be hearing from Gateway Technical